Chapter 7 Unconditional Giving. Feelings from Unconditional Giving. It turns out that we only find true peace, serenity, and joy as a byproduct of being loving and giving with other people with the expectation of nothing in return. That is unconditional giving, which means doing something with no expectation of something in return, with no strings attached. Our fulfillment, our true happiness, is a byproduct of unconditional giving. Shortcuts are self-seeking pleasure and gratification for our own selfish selves. Shortcuts are false and fleeting. Shortcuts provide what I call minor feelings. Major feelings include those with the highest quality attainable in the human condition: true happiness, peace, love, and joy. Those major feelings that we are all seeking only come from unconditional giving. That's it. That's the only way to get them. As we exercise our own free will, major feelings are earned by our choices that involve sacrifice and benefit others. They don't come from getting or taking, from pleasures or from self-gratification. Giving unconditionally is not our default or what we want to do most of the time. It's up to us to start giving unconditionally when we don't want to. Our free will is influenced by the subtle whispers of our heart's will and by the much louder will of our selfish instincts. Our instincts' will and influence are incredibly self-centered, whereas our heart's will is completely unselfish. Listen to the heart's will. Listening to the heart's will requires us to ignore the more powerful selfish will of the instincts and then act against them. The goal is to increase our choices for serving others instead of only ourselves. And by doing that, we unlock the major feelings that we all seek. Unconditional giving is the only way to express love truly. It is the action of love. Giving unconditionally gets us unconditional love from others in return. We reap what we sow. However, timing isn't always immediate and apparent. Sometimes our gratification is delayed rather than instant. True love is unconditional, not conditional. Unconditional giving is giving with love because there are no strings attached. Conditional giving is giving without love because there are strings attached, a return motive, a give and take, an expected trade of some kind. When you start unconditional giving consistently for a period of time, you will get wisdom and a depth of peace that you have never had before. You don't know what that feels like until you do. You cannot buy it. You cannot use money to buy the major feelings that the actions of unconditional giving bring to you. You simply cannot buy peace, serenity, or joy. Those have to be earned over time through sacrifice and your choice to serve others instead of yourself. Spiritual awakenings result from the action of unconditional giving to others over time. As a result of unconditional giving with no strings attached over a period of time, I began having a spiritual awakening. My spiritual awakening began from my choices and actions of giving to others unconditionally over time. 6 months prior to my revelations, because of my continued acts of unconditional giving, I began awakening to a peace, happiness, and joy that I had never known before. As part of that awakening, I began realizing that the golden rule was true because I noticed that the energy and resources that I gave out to others kept coming back to me. The key to my spiritual experience and awakening was starting to practice the action of unconditional giving. The goal of expert giver groups is to assist individuals with initiating and maintaining unconditional giving in their lives. Unconditional giving over time results in the experience of becoming enlightened. I didn't have to get or understand God in an intellectual way to have an awakening. A spiritual awakening does not result from learning information, but rather from choosing to give to others unconditionally and to forgive them over time. All that was necessary for me was to begin giving unconditionally for a long enough period of time. Then I started to become aware of things that I didn't know before. My spiritual awakening involved understanding the truth in life, which is normally hidden. It began with having moments of clarity in which I could see that what we give is what we get. I realize that if I help you, I'm really helping me. Furthermore, if you hurt, I hurt, even if you're on the other side of the world. Through the practice of unconditional giving, I was beginning to see through the persistent illusion that we are all separate individuals and starting to see that we are all part of the same spirit of one. Some of us have heard that the answer to finding God is deep down within us, so we think, oh, I should meditate to find God within. Yes, if we can achieve the complete release of our ego through meditation, that is certainly one method to glimpse the truth of the greater reality of one. But an initial experience with enlightenment can also result from choosing to start unconditionally giving to other people. A spiritual experience can result as a byproduct of being of service to others unconditionally over time. It involves action, the action of giving. Faith without works, says James 2:26, is dead in the King James Version. Knowledge in itself does not bring spiritual enlightenment. It is applied knowledge that matters. To be of service most effectively, the giving must be unconditional, with no strings attached, with no motives for sex or money attached. Most of us give with an expected outcome in return. By his example, Jesus taught that unconditional giving is the answer, that is, giving with no return motive. If there is a motive behind the giving, we don't get the results we are seeking, which is unconditional giving coming back to us. If we give to others with strings attached, then others will give to us with strings attached. But if we give unconditionally to others, then others will give unconditionally back to us. That's how it works. Overall, we get exactly how we give over time. Our future reflects our ongoing choices. What does it mean to be spiritual? It means to follow your heart. It is sacrifice and service to others, despite selfish desire, thereby gaining awareness of the insight that we are all truly one. That awareness does not come from religious traditions. Insight into spiritual truths come from giving unconditionally. The more you give, the more it is revealed to you that when you give to others, you are really giving to yourself. It is an awakening through choices of giving unconditionally, rather than through beliefs or doctrines. In my case, I gave unconditionally for over 6 months. It was at the end of that period that I was unexpectedly shown my series of revelations, after which I understood that the previous 6 months of my unconditional giving had earned me the revelations. I became aware that I had unknowingly passed a test, and the reward was the revelations and the purposes I was giving by the Spirit of One. Continued giving is required to maintain a spiritual awakening. A spiritual awakening has to be maintained by continually giving to keep it. After we are awakened, if we relapse into letting selfish instinctual drives take over for too long, the awakening disappears, fading from memory like a dream that can eventually be forgotten altogether. That is, we can completely forget our previous spiritual awakenings if we fall back into just following our instincts, which will always continually promote selfishness, directing us only to take and not give. Have you ever heard of individuals who had faith and then lost it? It is said that it's harder for those people to get their faith back than it is for those who never had faith to acquire it. It is very depressing to go from being a giver to a taker without knowing or remembering how to get back to giving. The goal is to remain in giving cycles for longer and longer periods of time. If I stop giving over time, I can forget how to give again. I can even forget that giving worked and how it felt, like a dream I cannot remember. That means forgetting the connection between giving and the peace, serenity, and joy that accompany it. How can I forget that? Because I have instinctual drives that are really powerful, and that will lie to me and wipe out my memory of how to give and of all the positive results that are connected to my giving. I cannot rely on yesterday's giving to keep carrying me forward with continued levels of peace, serenity, and joy. I have to continue giving to maintain those feelings. That is why accountability to another person, which requires humility, is important. Good friends will remind us that giving and serving are our solution here, and not selfish behavior or blaming others for our problems. Having the humility to become accountable to others for support with instinct management is part of the objective of expert giver groups. Once you have a spiritual awakening, it must be maintained daily through the continued action of unconditional giving. Otherwise, it becomes lost and forgotten. The process is comparable to exercising for keeping your body in shape. Are poor people the happiest? According to a documentary film called Happy, some of the poorest people in the world are the happiest. One part of the documentary is about people who live in huts with dirt floors in a village in India. They have severely limited supplies of food and clothing, but then I notice something. They are all smiling. What do they have to be happy about? They are interconnected and rely on each other. They are not isolated and alone. Social connections are an important ingredient for happiness. On the other hand, in our complex society, we have online replacements for the real thing, isolating us further and further from each other. The trouble is, it's not working. The illusion is that we are connecting more, which may be, but we are connecting more on superficial, not intimate or genuine levels. Happiness is only real when it's shared, not in isolation. We need more physical interaction with genuine connection and feedback from others, not more virtual interaction, which only provides and promotes more superficial connections and feedback. In the United States, we are closely surrounded by thousands and even millions of people, but we are still feeling more and more alone, isolated, apart, and separate. With less genuine and intimate connection to other people, each of us is in our own little world, on our phones, our laptops, watching Netflix, trying to entertain and distract ourselves endlessly in isolation. Many of us look to drugs and medicines to fix us, but that doesn't work either. Life is better if we don't try to live it alone. We need support from and interactions with other people to enable the cycle of giving and receiving to and from others. Also, we benefit from others in the form of guidance, feedback, and accountability for helping us to grow in positive directions. Specifically, I'm proposing to help and support others on our unconditional giving journeys by supporting, attending, and helping to develop expert giver groups around the world. We are not meant to be isolated and to live alone, unconnected except on superficial levels. Participation and interaction through actual physical means involving honesty, being genuine, vulnerability, and trust are becoming a thing of the past. Visiting in person and talking about what is really going on is happening less and less. For me to love you and for you to love me, we need to have a two-way relationship by interacting with each other, preferably in person and not electronically. Can we sit in public or anywhere waiting for food or whatever for 5 minutes without looking at our phone, Facebook, Instagram, or the news? We have become distraction junkies with our connections to others limited to hitting the like button or raging and venting about something online. We are stuck in a loop of media distractions. Streaming entertainment, internet content, social media, and our phones are consuming us. We are trapped in a loop of isolating and distracting ourselves. That has become the new norm. I'm guilty too. It's not easy not to fall into the phone or laptop distraction trap. People treat each other very differently on social media than they do in person, especially in negative ways. We are more connected than ever with social media by the numbers, but it is generally on a superficial level. The online arena has caused more division, becoming a place to vent opinions and arguments rather than a place of support and unity. Having supportive get-togethers to connect in person is becoming a rare event for many people these days. When I was growing up, I remember my dad regularly taking me to visit family members and friends. A common thing to do was actually to visit with people. These days, many of us don't know our neighbors. We may be around lots of people physically during the day, but we are not connecting emotionally or being real. We are not touching, we are not hugging. And everyone is worried about behaving and keeping apart. Political correctness has exploded. Everyone is on guard, not trusting anyone, ready to fight or run. Even though many of us go to Starbucks every day, we are not talking to each other in line. We don't trust each other. We are scared of each other, and we limit the risks involved with interaction. We are just seeing each other and being physically near each other. We may share half a second of eye contact and then it's back to the phone. What's going on here? What's going on is that we are all distracted, confused, and in pain on various levels all the time. We are on guard. We rarely connect in person with each other on deep or intimate levels. Conversations usually go like this. How are you? Fine. How are you? Fine. If we give a real response to that question, people are not ready for it. It's as if we broke the keep it all superficial rules. Many times our public connections involve quick smiles, darting eye contact, and awkward chit-chat about the weather. We are usually glad when the conversation is over, so we can hurry back to our safe place of self-focused distractions. We lack meaningful connections and authentic interactions with others emotionally, mentally, and physically. We are all yearning for deeper connections, but we have lost trust in each other, so we try to stay safe by remaining distant to protect ourselves from getting hurt. Intimate connection is not going to happen in line with strangers at Starbucks. We need to have a regular place to go with the intention of building authentic relationships with others we meet in person. My intent with Expert Giver Groups is to provide a meaningful, safe, and supportive way for us to reconnect again in person on a regular basis. Happiness is only real when it's shared. I recently saw a movie called Into the Wild, which tells a true story about a guy who goes on a journey by himself into the wilderness. The most significant thing that I remember from the movie is that he wrote in his journal about his search for happiness, which is, after all, the reason he spent all that time alone in the wilderness. What he discovers is that happiness is only real when it's shared. It doesn't happen when we are by ourselves, alone, in isolation. We need each other to experience happiness. That message was also given to me in my second revelation. Self-focus is the problem. Other focus is the solution. When a friend calls and starts to complain about self-centered problems, I ask him what he's doing to help other people. Helping you helps me. I can get out of my own head and problems by helping someone else. In most cases, when I help others with their problems, my problems tend to resolve themselves. Our primary goal in life should be to be other-focused, not self-focused. I was talking to a friend recently who is always focused on his own problems, and he is chronically depressed as a result. Focusing on ourselves and our own problems all the time is the problem. Our self-centeredness is the problem. Staying focused on the problem or our problems is the problem. But if I'm busy helping you, I'm not thinking about me. Self-focus as a general operating mode is a primary reason for depression. The reason why we are chronically restless, irritable, and discontented is that we are completely self-centered most of the time, focused only on ourselves. Constantly analyzing ourselves is not going to solve our problems. The answer is not to call someone to talk about ourselves over and over or to continually analyze ourselves. Self-analysis can be helpful, but only if its intent or focus is on helping me become more giving and less selfish with others. Focusing on others somehow helps us to solve our own problems, which in many cases start to magically take care of themselves. Sometimes trying to figure out the answer is not the answer. In most cases, helping others causes our problems to indirectly dissolve and answer themselves without the need to work on them directly. Logically speaking, this doesn't make sense. Unconditional giving is sometimes inconvenient. I am usually asked to give when it is inconvenient for me. For example, when giving requires me to change my plans, take some risk, or make some sacrifice. It always seems to be when I'm hungry or when I'm tired or when I'm in a bad mood or when I've worked all day and finally gotten a break that I get that phone call asking for help. I see that as a test and a challenge, and I sometimes laugh when it happens because deep down, below my mood of irritation, I know there are no coincidences that timing is always perfect. The universe does not operate just to fit my schedule. At such times, my goal is to say yes, even when my self-talk says, don't do this. Then I start coming up with reasons not to do it. Don't listen to those thoughts, because they are just lies thrown at you by your selfish instincts, which say, you don't have enough time. You're too tired to do it. Someone else will do it. Step up when duty calls. That means you're tired and you don't feel like it, and it interferes with your plans. The challenge is to ignore those thoughts and provide help regardless of your mood. If you only help when you feel like it, or when it's convenient, or when it fits in with your schedule, you will never help anyone. The commitment I'm recommending is that whenever you are asked to help, you do it regardless of how you feel in the moment. If all your giving were based on convenience, that would make it conditional, not unconditional. Helping a stranger who asks. One day, as I was just leaving a restaurant to head back to my car, an older gentleman came up and he asked, "You wouldn't happen to be going by the hospital, would you?" That was an odd question, but I didn't even think about it. Immediately, I just said, "Yes," without any pause or hesitation at all. I didn't even give myself a chance to go, "Well, sorry, I need to go do something right now," or give him some other BS story. I just said, "Absolutely. Where do you need to go?" It turned out that he was an older man with no transportation. He didn't ask me for money. He just needed a ride. I enjoyed meeting him, and we had a meaningful conversation on the way. Halt. Ever heard of HALT? It is an acronym used in recovery programs to mean that when one is hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, it is time to stop, take care of those needs, and then proceed. When those needs are not properly taken care of, they can cause increased levels of stress hormones and bad moods, which make it difficult to be of service by giving to others. Helping those who don't give in return. Some of us get to practice this kind of unconditional, unreciprocal, one-way giving with our children, dependent family members, or parents we're taking care of in their old age. Those we help may mostly be thinking of their own needs, wants, and demands without considering others. Such situations give us an opportunity to practice patience, kindness, and tolerance. In some of the most challenging moments that I was helping others, I've asked myself, if the roles were reversed, how would I want to be treated? Keep giving consistently, regardless of your circumstances. Our challenge is to start and maintain giving unconditionally, consistently over time, regardless of our circumstances. I'm talking about consistently being an unconditional giver, despite the moods we're in, despite the challenges and various stressors that come up daily, despite being sick, despite something bad happening to a loved one, despite financial circumstances, and despite being in physical pain. Say yes to giving opportunities. Help others when they need it, not only when it is convenient for you or you are in the mood. When someone needs help, the timing is rarely perfect for the giver. Everything in life happens for reasons that we cannot always understand logically. There are no mistakes. Rather, there is a continual, intelligent organization of circumstances that guides us from our hearts toward an outcome that benefits the greater good. Our selfish free will choices based on instincts are constantly throwing wrenches into the plan. But the Spirit of One is constantly adjusting and updating its subtle guidance in favor of general outcomes that benefit the greater good. Hindsight is 20/20. After some time passes and we examine the past, we can usually piece together the why that makes sense. One common explanation is, that had to happen in order for this other thing to happen. But a more accurate explanation would be, after everything that does happen, regardless of whether from free will choice or accident, an overall intelligence is guiding all of our hearts in ways that benefit the greater good. If someone is put in front of you who needs help, there's a reason for the timing and why it's you who is presented with the opportunity. There are no coincidences. Through our heart, the Great Spirit is always guiding us when our free will allows it. Anyone who comes in front of me in need is put there for a reason, for me to give help. There are no coincidences. This is related to the interconnected intelligence that is continually orchestrating all life as one, always working to balance, guide, and benefit the whole, despite our individual free will choices. I will help, but only if I get something out of it. The needy person provides an opportunity for me to give unconditionally, but such opportunities are not always perfect. The ideal opportunity would be like a beautiful single woman needing help changing a flat tire, and it just so happens that I pass by at that exact moment without some other guy pulling over, interrupting my helping her. Oh, but shoot, there's the sex motive. My helping her is conditional. Oops. Or I encounter a guy in the desert who needs help changing his flat tire, so I decide to stop and help, because I remember the story of the guy who did just that, and it turned out to be Howard Hughes, who appeared poor, but who later rewarded the guy with a huge chunk of money. So I help somebody who looks poor because he might actually be rich and give me some money or some other opportunity later? There's the money motive. Oops. So, I help only if I might benefit? Conditional giving, conditional helping, right? That's our instinct. It's natural. It's our default mode. Will we choose to help someone who is disabled, who might be repulsive, confused, foul-smelling, or hard to understand and rambling? Will we help that person, since he apparently has nothing to give back to us in return? It is not always comfortable or convenient or desirable when the opportunity to give unconditionally arises. It is a choice we make in the moment, and it's not the one we usually want to make. Are all your interactions with people conditional? Are our actions with other people, including friends, family, and strangers, based on a trade, a give and get? Are they all transactional, as if we are doing something for them to get something back from them? How about giving someone something for nothing in return? Do you ever do that? Are you willing to do that?